are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Really excited after week one to be enjoying a victory Monday, not a misery Monday, with the Seahawks opening with a 28-16 road win over the Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium. So we get to talk about a win. I've got a fish sitting behind me on the wall. It's a great Monday, jam-packed episode coming your way. We're going to tackle your mailbag questions as we always do on Monday, plus some takeaways from yesterday's victory at the Oil Can in Indianapolis. Looking for a Sunday pregame show that talks about every game and every team in depth? Check out the Locked On NFL Sunday Show live every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. No sketches, no celebrity camos, no fluff, just football every Sunday morning with hosts Cody Rourke and Ross Jackson. Follow and subscribe Locked On NFL on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. And don't forget to turn on notifications to be notified when the show goes live every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. All offseason long, fans and media members alike have been dying to know what Shane Waldron's offense was going to look like in a regular season game setting. We had only seen preseason games without number three Russell Wilson under center. Finally got our first taste of that in Indianapolis on Sunday. And I think it's safe to say, with the Seahawks pulling out a 28-16 victory and the offense clicking on all cylinders in the first half, that while it wasn't a perfect debut by any means, you couldn't have asked for much better of a first impression from Waldron with Russell Wilson running the shows on his offense.
Yeah, Corbin, I have to agree with you. I think it was appropriate that this game was in Indianapolis because it felt like the Seahawks basically had the Indy 500 kind of mindset with the way that they were able to hit the ground running. I think that there is an awful lot of people that deserve a great deal of kudos for the fact that the Seattle played as well as they did. But I love that we are focusing in on Shane Waldron and the way that Russell Wilson and the offense was able to just explode against the Colts. Of course, we know that the Seahawks were unable to or chose not to use most of their stars throughout the preseason. So there was all kinds of questions about how effective they would be. And yet Russell Wilson, I thought, played as good as he ever has. And then I think a great deal of that has to go back to the tempo, the creativity and the play calling from Shane Waldron. I know there's been a lot of buzz about like the jet sweeps and things like that with D. Eskridge. I love the touchdown to Gerald Everett and the way that they set that up. You know, how many times have we seen Seattle performances in the past where it was just the same type of offense, the same type of plays? This felt like one of the very first times where Seattle's offense was changing things up and actually dictating the action, forcing the defense to adjust. A very good Colts defense with a raucous crowd behind them, and the Seahawks absolutely silenced them. I thought it was a masterful performance, especially considering the fact that it was obviously in week one.
Obviously, as I said, it was not a perfect performance. The third quarter, they had three drives that ended in punts and the other one with a fumble by Chris Carson. So that quarter, they'll want to throw out after they watch the film. But otherwise, this was a very impressive performance on offense. And there's been so much talk about what expectations were as far as what this scheme was going to look like with Waldron coming from Sean McVay's system. And everybody was expecting a lot of wide zone, some jet sweeps, more pre-snap motion, more tight end involvement, more balance. We saw all of those boxes checked off in yesterday's game. And I know it's just one game, and Shane Waldron's now going to have to be able to adapt because there's now film out there for opposing coordinators to be able to come up with game plans to stop Seattle's offense. But I can tell you there's a lot that they did not use in this game as far as plays go. And the multiplicity of the offense, that's really been, to me, the most interesting part of all this. Having a handful of formations that you can run so many different plays out of that look the same. You were able to see that on the field some in yesterday's season opener. And so everything that fans have been wanting, I mean, you and I have seen on Twitter the way fans have talked the last 5, 6, 7 years. with Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer as offensive coordinators. And there were certain things that fans have just been clamoring for. Can we have more tempo? Are we going to be able to get the tight ends involved more? Can we have less predictability? All of those things were checked off to an extent in yesterday's game. So I don't feel like this debut could have gone any better for Shane Waldron. You mentioned Russell Wilson. This was the second highest passer rating that he has posted in a game in his NFL career, 152.8. He was 18 for 23, threw a little over 250 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions. He had an 11-yard scramble, so he still looks like he knows how to slither out of the pocket and pick up yardage when he needs to as a runner. I thought it was one of the better games that he has played, and certainly he benefited from pass protection as well. I thought the offensive line played a key role in that. The 69-yard touchdown he had to Tyler Lockett, that was a picture-perfect pocket that the offensive line created. Absolutely no penetration, no pressure coming from the Colts. It was almost a perfect U that the offensive line had in front of Russell Wilson. So all of those things added together, there's a reason they were so efficient in the first half. Second half, they weren't near as efficient, but they did get that key touchdown drive in the fourth quarter with DK Metcalf capping things off on a 15-yard score. And overall, you couldn't have asked for a better game for Shane Waldron and the offense to kickstart a new era of Seahawks football.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, I thought that it was an absolutely masterful performance by so many people. I highlighted before the Gerald Everett touchdown. I just thought that it was a zone beater, and we have not seen Seattle do things like that in the past, really adjusting. And the fact that you mentioned DK Metcalf, obviously Tyler Lockett was the Seahawks receiver who, you know, had the spectacular performance in this game. And he deserves a lot of credit. But give Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron some credit as well. When Xavier Rhodes, the big physical cornerback for the Colts, was ruled out of this game, I immediately thought, okay, this is your opportunity to have DK Metcalf go nuts. And what the Colts did is they shifted their defensive alignment basically to bracket DK Metcalf the entire time. So kudos to the Seahawks for realizing that and then focusing their attention elsewhere. Once Tyler Lockett started making his big plays, Gerald Everett making his big plays, you saw the Colts have to adjust. Exactly. You saw the Colts have to adjust, and that's when DK Metcalf got back involved. So we had talked about it all offseason, Corbin. Seattle had to be more unpredictable on offense. They had to find different targets. When the Colts tried to take away DK Metcalf, the Seahawks were ready for it, and that's why their offense was clicking on all cylinders.
Very encouraging first game. But again, it was just one game. We'll see what Shane Waldron does from an adaptation standpoint once they play the Titans next week. You can guarantee the Titans, especially with what happened to them yesterday against the Arizona Cardinals, they're going to come out angry. They're going to come in prepared with that game tape from yesterday's game in Indianapolis. And so they're going to be ready to go. Shane Waldron's going to now start getting challenged a little bit more now that his offense has been seen to an extent. He'll have a chance to show that he can adapt and adjust and throw out some new wrinkles each week to make this offense continue to hum and be dynamic. When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to tackle your mailbag questions on our Monday mailbag. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Football season is back. Let's make the most of it with a better way to create your custom pool at runyourpool.com. The premier sports pool hosting service, Run Your Pool, makes it ridiculously easy to run a football pool with friends, family, or office mates. They offer dozens of formats, including Survivor, Pick'em, Squares, Confidence Pools, 33 and more. Run Your Pool hosts formats for NFL, college football with one-week games, full season, playoffs, or the Super Bowl. Unlike other fantasy sports platforms, Run Your Pool also has options and settings to make it your own. You can even brand your pool for your local business, bar, or restaurant. Reconnect with friends and join nearly 2 million football fans to make every game action-packed this season. Check them out today and get $10 off at runyourpool.com. Check them out today and get $10 off at runyourpool.com/lockedon, or use our promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Anywhere, everywhere in the world, Run Your Pool helps friends and colleagues compete. The NFL season starts September 9th. Start today at runyourpool.com/lockedon and have your pool up and running in minutes. runyourpool.com/lockedon. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Victory Monday edition, our first Victory Monday of the year, and thankfully, it was after the season opener. It is time for our mailbag questions. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Our first one coming from Charlie Eaton. Any initial thoughts on the NFC West after week one? Matt Stafford looks like he can be a real problem. I think that is an understatement, the way that the Rams looked last night against the Chicago Bears. Granted, the Bears are a team that I don't think are going to be a playoff team this year, and they've got some holes on both sides of the ball, but the Rams looked really good, just like the Seahawks did in their season opener. And all four NFC West teams were victorious, three of them winning by 12 points or more. And the 49ers were killing the Lions until they let the Lions get back in the game late and make it interesting. But I thought all four teams looked fantastic yesterday. And really, it's not surprising. This is the best division in the NFL.
It really is the best division in the NFL, as you said, Corbin. I mean, you know, the NFC West was 4-0, all four teams winning their first game. And meanwhile, we'll hear a lot more nationally speaking about the NFC East or Least, which are 0-4 to start off their season. You know, it's kind of funny how that goes in that, you know, you mentioned the Detroit Lions made a big run on the San Francisco 49ers. And of course, the Detroit Lions had former NFC West quarterback Jared Goff. That was the, you know, the impetus behind that big comeback attempt by the Lions. So, I don't know, crazy thought, but the NFC West, the West Coast is the best coast, it seems like, when it comes to quality football play, at least in the early portion of this season. And it is a little concerning, of course, because I think you could make an argument that any one of these four teams in the NFC West could put everything together to make a real deep postseason run, obviously be the division winners. At the same time, I still firmly believe that the best quarterback in the division is Seattle's Russell Wilson, and that what makes the Seahawks, in my opinion, the favorite to repeat as divisional champs.
I was so impressed with what the Arizona Cardinals did to the Titans yesterday, because I thought the Titans, and I still think the Titans, are going to be a dangerous team. They just laid a week one egg. It happens. I think they'll figure it out. Maybe they'll figure it out this week when they play the Seahawks. They're going to be upset going into that game. But Arizona was firing on all cylinders. Kyler Murray looked great. Chandler Jones is back healthy in a big way for that defense. Yeah, he's on pace for like a million sacks this year. So the Cardinals look fantastic. The Rams look really good. The 49ers for three quarters looked really good. And then they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal, had some injuries. So that's a little worrisome for San Francisco. They're already getting banged up after one game and with all the injuries they had last year. But that is a really tough division. And I feel like you could put a blindfold on, throw a dart at a board, and whatever team you hit probably has a decent chance of winning the division, because all four of them have the talent to do it. After School Quisenia writes, what are your thoughts on what's going to happen with LJ Collier? Now, this was really a big storyline going into yesterday's game, because LJ Collier, the former first-round pick, started all 16 games for the Seahawks last year. He was playing with the first-team defense throughout training camp and in the preseason, and yet he was a healthy scratch in yesterday's game. And I thought the Pete Carroll's explanation after the game was kind of an odd one. It's basically just saying, well, just, you know, the game set up, the defense we're going to be playing, didn't really give us a concrete answer on that. The way that I'm looking at it is Clint Hurts looking at his defensive line. He's got 10 players right now. That says we're healthy with everybody else. Other players offer more as pass rushers. Rasheem Green can play inside. Kerry Hyder can play inside. It looks to me like they're saying we right now don't need you with the other players that we have on defense. And I hate saying that because it was his birthday yesterday, but I don't think this was just a one game thing. If they keep everybody else healthy, maybe there's matchups where you want to keep him active. But if I'm number 91, I'm worried after sitting out yesterday, because everybody else in that D-line played really well in the season opener. It's going to be hard for him to get reps.
That's an excellent point. I think that, I think there's a couple of things here that we have to talk about with LJ Collier. I think, for one, let's just say what it is. LJ Collier has not performed so far in the training camp and preseason, I think, as Seattle expected, after being that first-round selection, after seemingly taking strides a year ago, as you mentioned, starting all 16 games. And so I think this definitely is a bit of a statement to LJ Collier. And then certainly you want to give credit to all of the other players that were active that had a spectacular performance for the Seahawks. At the same time, I also would argue that I really think that the Seahawks have given themselves a great deal of flexibility along their defensive line. I think that they went into this particular matchup against the Colts, who you knew were going to try and run the ball a lot with Jonathan Taylor, just the same way that the Tennessee Titans are going to try to run the ball a lot this next week with Derrick Henry. I think that's part of the reason why we saw such incredible play from Brian Monet. I think that he was asked, basically put on the spot and said, look, you're going to be active in this game and you need to play really well to force us to continue to do so. When the Seahawks switch and play a team that's going to be passing the ball a little bit more, that's where I expect a player maybe like an Al Woods or Brian Monet to be inactive, and then have a player like LJ Collier, because of his greater pass rush potential. I say that because Monet was very impressive and as a pass rusher against the Colts as well. But I do believe that Collier gives you more in that regard. So I don't think this is a case of LJ Collier is never going to be active again, the way that some out there might suggest. But I do absolutely think this is this is just a reflection of the fact that Collier has not played very well and the Seattle's defensive line is absolutely loaded. I think, as you just said, Corbin, they are going to be doing matchups week by week, and it's going to be interesting to see how much the former first-round pick winds up being active for this club.
Next question here coming from Mike Halsey. Do you think Seattle makes a move with all this cap space for a cornerback or a center? I think that if they were going to make a move at those positions, they've already made some trades for corners. They haven't been looking at any centers. They did bring in Dakota Shepley. I thought Kyle Fuller played okay yesterday. Ethan Posick looked horrific in the few snaps that he had. But Kyle Fuller looked okay out there. So I don't know the Seahawks right now in a position where they feel like they need to make a rash move. They do have the cap space, but I do think that cap space could come into play by the time we get close to the trade deadline, especially the Seahawks find themselves, we expect, embattled in a two or three team, maybe even four team race atop the NFC West, and they need to add somebody else as a reinforcement to upgrade this roster, they could. But I would not expect there's going to be a week two trade. And other teams, nobody's out of the playoffs this early in the season, so you're not going to be getting that deal for a solid football player. I just don't see it right now.
I agree with you. I think there's some veterans that are out there that now that you're into the season, you don't have to give them the guaranteed contracts. And so kudos to the Seahawks for putting themselves in a position to be creative. But I don't see anybody out there that is critical that Seattle brings in. At the cornerback and center positions in particular, those are positions of concern, but I think that you have to feel a little bit better about how those positions are sorting themselves out, considering the way that the Seahawks played against the Colts. And before we kind of get off that topic too much, again, I think that this was very much the Seahawks deserve some credit for sprinkling in Ethan Posick as well as Kyle Fuller. We saw at the linebacker position as well, Cody Barton playing a lot alongside Jordan Brooks, the nickel corners back spots as well. I thought it was brilliant by Seattle to rotate those players in. There's so many games that I saw, Corbin, over the weekend where players were just struggling with the fact that they now are being asked to play so many more snaps. And it was warm in Indianapolis, or at least those of us who were watching on television were told that it was. So all of those different reasons I thought made a lot of sense for Seattle to continue to rotate, continue to evaluate their backups, and then see if there are some possible upgrades available to them.
Yeah, they were trying to keep some of those position groups. They're trying to keep players fresh. And there's a few spots where the competition apparently didn't yield a true winner, so to speak. You can say that about the center spot. But I think after yesterday's game, I think that has been solved. Whether for better or worse, it's going to be Kyle Fuller, and Posick got hurt in the game anyway. Mo tweets, why did Alton Robinson have such a small amount of snaps after having a very good camp and preseason? I feel like this is a question that gets asked over and over again, but really, I'm not even going to give a lengthy answer to this at this point. Where are you going to play him at right now? Rasheem Green had a monster game. Kerry Hyder did some nice things, even though his stat sheet wasn't anything gaudy. He made some really nice plays. Benson Mayoa had a fantastic game. Carlos Dunlap had a really solid game. Daryl Taylor was rushing off the edge a lot in yesterday's game. Where are you going to play him at? It's a good problem to have, and he gave them some really good snaps when he was on the field. But at least yesterday, you could make an argument that he deserved more snaps because the other guys in front of him were playing really well. That's just the reality of the situation when you have really good depth, which it's weird saying that at defensive end, but that's what the Seahawks have right now.
It is. And I think that you just answered it perfectly. I mean, how do you take off one of those other players off the field, considering how many big plays virtually all of them made? And speaking of, we might be talking about this a little bit more in our final segment here, Corbin, where we're talking about some game balls for some of the players who really stood out on all sides of the field for the Seahawks. But Terrell Taylor and that pass rush on Braden Smith, you can make an argument on the other side when you have a third string left tackle there that maybe Rasheem Green, maybe he had a little bit easier matchup, but Braden Smith is a quality right tackle. And for Darrell Taylor to just put him on his backside with that power rush and the speed that he demonstrated earlier, it's pretty easy, I think, now for Seahawks fans to see exactly what Seattle scouting staff has been so excited about with Darrell Taylor.
Last question here coming from Holly. This is a perfect segue going into our third quarter. What was your favorite play from yesterday's game? Usually I have one that jumps out. This game had so many that I enjoyed watching over and over again, but there's one that's head and shoulders for the rest. Now, when Tyler Lockett made that great touchdown catch in the first quarter, I would have thought for sure that would be my pick. But then you mentioned Brian Monet earlier. The play where he powered past Ryan Kelly, who, by the way, is a top five center in my opinion. Yep. He powered by him, and it looked like there was a flying refrigerator hitting Carson Wentz. Just boom, just landed on him. And I've probably watched that replay now 50 times. I can't stop watching that. It's mesmerizing seeing a man that size show that kind of quickness and the ability to get in the backfield. And I'm really surprised Carson Wentz got up after that hit. It was a clean hit, but he absolutely leveled him. So that one takes the cake. I just can't stop watching that hit by Monet. It was fantastic.
Oh, like you said, there were just so many spectacular plays by the Seahawks. You know, as you mentioned with Tyler Lockett basically doing his Willie Mays impression and just adjusting, to where he was able to track that football for Russell Wilson's first touchdown. I don't know that I've ever seen Russell Wilson throw a further and more accurate ball than that second deep touchdown to Tyler Lockett. You talked about the pass protection that he was given on that play. That is just, for a former offensive lineman like myself, Corbin, I mean, that's about as good as it gets. And then defensive side of the ball, I talked about Darrell Taylor and that pass rush. That was phenomenal. How about the explosiveness? Remember on fourth and one with Jamal Adams jumping over the top? I mean, that's the type of playmaking ability and intensity that Jamal Adams brings. I don't know. I think this is one of those games that the Seahawks fans should watch and rewatch and rewatch. Maybe keep this one for the dog days of summer, because this was one of those performances that are going to make you feel really, really good if you're a Seahawks fan.
We're going to continue breaking down this Seahawks victory coming up in the third quarter. Some key takeaways on both sides of the ball. And as you mentioned, we're going to be handing out our game balls from the week one victory. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. Did you know Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? We talk about it every episode, but there's a reason why. When you're a Built Bar fan like myself, we're passionate about our favorite flavors, whether that's mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, cookies and cream, German chocolate. There are so many delicious flavors. It's hard to pick a favorite. If you haven't tried them all, you can get a mixed box where you'll get two of each of the nine flavors. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're also healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, just 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams net carbs. Amazing flavors. They're all tasty and they're all healthy. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 50% off your order. Use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Victory Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Seahawks opening the season with a bang, a 28-16 convincing victory over the Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium. We talked about Russell Wilson and what he was able to do in the first quarter. He threw for almost 255 yards, had four touchdown passes, a 152.8 passer rating, one of the best performances of his career statistically, extremely efficient, and led the Seahawks up and down the field. But there was a lot more to this game than just Shane Waldron's offense and Russell Wilson. So let's talk takeaways here, Rob, on the offensive side of the football, away from Russell Wilson. What was the biggest takeaway for you coming out of this game?
Well, we talked about it a little bit in our opening segment, Corbin, with just the fact that Seattle's offense was humming and how much concern there had been with Shane Waldron and the fact that this was a new offense and Seattle's starters had not played, of course, during the preseason. So if we're going to be handing out game balls, I think that Shane Waldron deserves one. I think that Russell Wilson deserves one, but that's pretty low-hanging fruit there. You know, I think that you really have to go back to Tyler Lockett and the touchdowns that he was able to create. That first catch for the touchdown where he, again, the ball is initially over one shoulder. He has to adjust and make that reception. He made it look so easy, and that's such a difficult play. For anybody who has played football wearing a helmet, they know that your spatial awareness, your ability to see is so limited there. And I know that that's one of the things that when I am evaluating wide receivers for the NFL draft, and we often talk about players who can track the ball over their shoulder. There is a lot of players who can track the ball over their left shoulder or their right. But to adjust in mid-stride is absolutely fantastic, and he did it easily. And then to do the exact same thing, essentially, with the deep ball, just show that straight-line speed to be able to run away. I think that Tyler Lockett deserves an awful lot of credit. And what I like the most about it, Corbin, is this is going back to Wilson and Waldron, is the fact that I don't know that was necessarily Seattle's strategy from the get-go. I think if the Colts had Xavier Rhodes, the big, long, former Pro Bowl cornerback, who I think matches up pretty well against Metcalf, then I wonder if Seattle or if the Colts wouldn't have had their basically corners one-on-one on the outside, and that would have been a different distribution of the football. But I love the fact that when the Colts did make Xavier Rhodes inactive, the game plan completely changed. And it's that type of ability to adapt that I think is what makes this Seahawks offense much, much better. And so, again, if I was giving out game balls on the offensive side of the ball, it would be Shane Waldron, it would be Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and I certainly would be acknowledging that offensive line because I really think that DeForest Buckner is one of the best offensive linemen in the league. He did make his presence known in this game, but he wasn't the down-to-down disruptor that he can be. So, again, I think I would run out of footballs if I had to give out game balls for a bad offense that I think deserves one for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I think this is a really difficult one to, you know, figure out who one player would be to give a game ball to. But I'm going to go away from Russell Wilson, too, because like you said, that's low-hanging fruit. That's the easy pick here. I'm actually going to go with the tight end that they brought in with Shane Waldron, and that's Gerald Everett. One of his best plays ended up not counting because it was negated by a penalty. But that play stood out to me because it was a quick little dump off to him, and then he broke a bunch of tackles, which is something we've talked about all offseason being a big strength of his that can really help the Seahawks offense. They've struggled so much creating after the catch. You could see that with Gerald Everett just running through tacklers, picking up 21 yards in that play. He had that 9-yard touchdown on a slant. And Wilson ended up later saying that he was like the third or fourth option on that play. So that's the type of progressions that we're talking about in this offense, in the passing game that the Seahawks have with Shane Waldron. And maybe the thing that excited me the most, because, of course, I'm a run game guy, being able to see D. Eskridge run his first jet sweep for 13 yards, the reason it went for 13, not just because he can move, but Gerald Everett had a phenomenal kickout block on that play. And you could see him making blocks in the run game as an inline blocker, coming out of the backfield, playing out wide. I mean, he basically played every position except quarterback and offensive line for the Seahawks in this game. And that's what they are going to do with him. They're going to move him around. And I also want to give a shout out to Chris Carson real quick, because his performance gets lost by the fact that Russell Wilson had four touchdowns and a lot of the skill players on the outside were making big plays. But Chris Carson keyed that first scoring drive with a 33-yard run that I'm still trying to figure out how the hell he got through that hole, and I'm going to say hole like this, because there was nothing there. He slipped through a couple of tackles and then managed to explode 33 yards before going out of bounds. And there were several other plays where this is just the old school mentality he brings to the table. He could have just gone out of bounds, but nah, I'm going to shrug a guy off me and I'm going to get 5 extra yards. That's the way Chris Carson plays. And so I thought he had a really good game for the Seahawks as a runner, made some plays as a receiver as well. So kudos to him. I think he's getting lost a little bit in the shuffle with how many other players played well, but that was a big part of their offensive success. They had balance with Chris Carson running the rock.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I've used this kind of silly little analogy before, but everybody wants Russ to cook, including apparently Pete Carroll now. but really, it's all Chris Carson setting the table and just the physicality that he runs. I really think that is a critical part to Seattle's offense. And that early run, as you said, it was balling up pretty good. And Chris Carson just has a almost Marshawn Lynch-like just kind of unwillingness to go down to the first tackler. And I think that the rest of the team just feeds off of that physicality and intensity. So, yes, I think that Chris Carson is possibly could get overlooked a little bit. But anybody who is a true blue Seahawks fan who watches this team knows, I think, the importance that Chris Carson plays on this squad. So I think that all those players, and then you mentioned the offensive line. I love that you mentioned Gerald Everett for all the different reasons that you did. You know I'm excited about him. I also want to give a little bit of credit to Dwayne Brown. I saw some offensive linemen who have been brought in by other teams here recently that maybe missed some training camp, maybe just had recently re-signed or whatever the case might be, and they clearly were not in shape. They clearly struggled, and their teams struggled in large part because of that. That clearly was not the case with the Seahawks. Dwayne Brown looked like he was in terrific shape. I think he had a spectacular first game, as did Quandre Diggs, to get ahead of myself on the defensive side of the ball. But the fact that both those players had sat out a little bit of time here recently, they could have been a distraction. Instead, I thought they were quietly two of the better players in the field for the Seahawks.
Yeah, really good point. He had no pressures allowed, neither did Brandon Shell. I mean, the offensive line in general played pretty well. There were a few miscues in the third quarter, but I thought the group as a whole did a great job protecting Russell Wilson and opening up run lanes. Real quick, let's get to the defensive side. We have talked a lot about defense already up to this point. I could rave about Brian Monet's performance all day long. I mean, he's getting my defensive game ball. I don't know who else you can give it to. I mean, there were other players that did really good things, but I just felt like Brian Monet set the tone in this game. And Rasheem Green had an outstanding effort. Daryl Taylor had an outstanding effort. Benson Mayoa quietly had a really good game. I mean, that entire defensive line just balled in this game. But you got to give big number 90 the love. 5 tackles from a 350-pound defensive tackle. He had 3 quarterback pressures. If Rasheem Green wouldn't have got there first, he would have had a sack in the second quarter where he would have just swallowed up Carson Wentz. Wentz had to be tired of seeing that freight train getting into the backfield and coming after him. And you just don't expect to see that from Brian Monet. So, again, it's just one of those things. You got to give credit where it's due. Brian Monet, to me, was the player of the game on defense for the Seahawks. He just – every play was jumping off the field. And not just because he's a big dude and he's easy to spot, but what he was doing with that size and the quickness that he was showing off in the run game and rushing the passer. There were a lot of great plays by other guys on defense. They did a lot of great things at all three levels. But to me, everything was feeding off of the big fella in the middle, Brian Monet.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I thought that he was absolutely spectacular in this game, and that was a bit of a surprise to me. For him to play that well against a first-round pick, and I would agree with you. I think that Ryan Kelly is easily among the best centers in this game. And so for him to have that performance, I think certainly deserves a great deal of credit. But as you kind of mentioned, I think you could give a game ball to just about anyone of Seattle's defensive linemen, considering how effective that they were. I mean, just about any player that you wanted to watch on one snap or another was making an impact play. And so because of that, I'm going to actually switch back a spot, and I'm going to go back to that linebacker position. As we just talked about, you know, sometimes people will overlook Chris Carson because of just all the splashy plays by everybody else. To me, this was one of those games where I thought that Bobby Wagner had about as good of a performance as you're going to get, considering that he was going against, in my opinion, one of probably the elite offensive lineman in the NFL, and Quentin Nelson. And we talked about this before, Corbin, that the fact that the Seahawks only play the Colts every 4 years. And so, unfortunately, we only got to see Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck one time. How many more times are we going to get to see Bobby Wagner go up against Quentin Nelson? And just to watch those two future Hall of Famers, at least in my opinion, battle, to see Wagner anticipate where Nelson was going to be and try to get to that space. I mean, it was just football 101. For a football junkie like myself, it was just about as good as it gets. Wagner didn't have the splashiest performance of his career or anything like that. But at the same time, the fact that Seattle was able to make the Indianapolis Colts basically one-dimensional, to eliminate the running game. And certainly Monet and the other big guys along the line deserve a great deal of credit for that. But similar to Chris Carson setting the table on the offensive side of the ball, of course, Bobby Wagner is one of the most critical elements of Seattle's defense. And I think that he possibly could get overlooked a little bit as we hand out all of these kudos to the flashier players, the new guys on Seattle's defense. It's still begins and ends at number 54 in the middle.
And I'm going to stick at linebacker real quick. Jordan Brooks had 11 tackles and did really well in coverage. I remember the play that he was against Mo Alley Cox, the former VCU basketball player, and he was hip to hip with him and didn't make enough contact to draw a penalty there. It was really sound coverage. He missed a couple of tackles. Bobby Wagner had a couple missed tackles, but he still finished with 11, had a very solid game in coverage. So you are seeing the second-year player really come into his own. That entire front seven played outstanding football in this entire game, and that's the reason the Colts couldn't truly get their run game going, and that's the reason Carson Wentz didn't have any time most of the afternoon to be able to find receivers because he was under constant duress. That group as a whole, you could give all of them game balls with the way they played yesterday. Just a fantastic effort by Pete Carroll's front seven. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get your daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag. Wherever you get podcasts, you can follow me on Twitter, Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out the Locked On Seahawks podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we come back for our Tuesday show, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to look back at the last couple of times the Seahawks battled with the Tennessee Titans. We're going to start pulling back the curtain and checking out the Titans, Seattle's upcoming week two opponent in their home season opener at Lumen Field. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.